Welcome to the October 19th, 2012 Jubilize Me podcast. Jubilize Me. This is the Drupalize Me podcast where we talk about all things Drupal, and it comes out every other Friday, so that would be bi-weekly, or I don't know, how do you split up a year by that? Like that would be like 52, 26, like, I don't know.
Dude, that sounds like math. I don't know about that.
All right, we'll leave that by the side of the road then. So I am Addison Berry, and today I have with me Angie Byron, also known as Webchick on the interwebs.
Hello.
In the Octo, which is the office of the CTO. And she is the director of community development there. She did also used to work for Lullabot many years ago.
Hell yeah.
We totally started our friendship, which continues to this day. She's also the engineering manager for the Spark team, who are working on getting some strong authoring experience improvements into Drupal 8 core, so like shipping with core. And we're going to talk about that on this podcast. She's also the co-author of Using Drupal, along with myself, and Drupal Association board member since the association was established years ago. She came from the Google Summer of Code world. That's how she entered into Drupal. She's also a general cat herder in the community. And I would have to add that she is a really good friend and a mentor to me personally as well. And say to many other people out there.
Thanks, Eddie. I also have to call Eddie out as a mentor. She's the one who taught me how to swear.
Yes!
No, that's awesome, Eddie. Thanks a lot for asking me to be here. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you here. It's been a while, and I'm excited to chat and catch up on like what's going on, because you've been working on all kinds of crazy cool stuff. Before we dive into that, though, I'm going to take my few minutes to check off my little informational slot here. First, I just want to let folks know that the Coding for Views series of videos that we've been putting out is going to be wrapping up next week, next Wednesday. The Wednesday after this podcast. It's a date somewhere in the 20th. This is stuff. That same Wednesday, our release day is every Wednesday, by the way. We're going to be doing a brand new series on the Omega base theme. And the first couple of those that come out next week are going to be free. So I'm pretty excited about that. We just spent, Kyle, Joe, and I on the Drupalize Me team spent last week in Providence, Rhode Island at the Lullabot Activity Center doing a whole bunch of recording. So we have a lot of stuff coming down the pike, which I'm pretty excited about. In general Drupal news and events, first I want to say big congratulations and thank you to our new at-large board members, Pedro Camba from Barcelona, Spain, and Morten Deko, or Morten DK, as we say in English, from Copenhagen, Denmark. So kudos to those guys. They have a lot of work cut out for them, I'm sure, but very exciting to see them leading the charge. Another thing that I came across, and I didn't see a lot of chatter about, but I thought was pretty cool, I guess because I'm doing a podcast, the first Drupal Latino podcast came out a couple weeks ago, and so you can check that out on archive.org, and that's at /details/podcast-Drupal Latino 1, the numeral 1. I'll put a link in the podcast notes for that, but if you want to get a Drupal podcast in Spanish, you should go check that out. And then we have a whole bunch of events going on. It's fall. It's like Drupal event time. So this weekend, which is like October 20th, 21st-ish, there's Drupal Camp in Spain, in Madrid. Our newest employee, Juan Pablo, also known as Wampy, is one of the co-organizers, so he's going to be there for that. Drupal Camp South Florida in Fort Lauderdale is happening this weekend. The Pacific Northwest Summit in Seattle is also happening. That's going to be a nice big gathering of nerds. Next weekend, October 26th through 28th, there's Drupalhagen, which is Drupal Camp in Copenhagen, my hometown, and I will be attending that. Atlanta Biz Summit and Drupal Camp in Atlanta is happening that same weekend. I think that maybe Jared Ponchat will be going to that, but I'm not 100%. But I'm going to say he is. So there. And then on the horizon, if you can't end up making any of those particular events, and I know it's very location-based, but Bad Camp is coming up in Berkeley, California, the first week in November. Many of the Lullabots are going to be there, and I think they're up to like 1,200, 1,300 people attending now. Big event. There are going to be sprints happening at the same time during that in Ghent in Belgium and Zurich, Switzerland. There may be other ones going. So even if you can't attend Bad Camp, there's going to be a lot of sprinting and gathering happening at the same time to kind of push a lot of community things forward. So check that out and see if your local group is going to do anything. And then there's also a camp in Ukraine, which I'm going to really mangle this, but I think it is Lviv Eurocamp. In Lviv, Ukraine. Somebody from Ukraine needs to correct me on that. But that's happening November 3rd and 4th. And if you want to check out events, you can always go to groups.drupal.org/events. There's also a really cool website out there called DrupalCal. It's like Drupal Calendar, DrupalCal.com, which has got a nice graphical interface for looking stuff up. So. Anyway, so lots of events. Get to an event if you can. So, Angie, I got you. I'm going to ask a question that people really want to know.
Oh, dear.
Seriously, before we start talking about your awesome Drupal stuff, like, do you do anything that's not Drupal? What are the things that get you excited or make you happy that are not Drupal related?
I'm sorry, wait, so are you implying there are things other than Drupal in this world that people might have an interest in? I'm very confused. This is, no, that's a good question, actually. So, yeah, so when I'm not doing Drupal, which I do Drupal most of the time, because I love it, I have a wife. I live in Vancouver, BC, and we spend time going out for walks with our dog in the beautiful nature. That's right. Once in a while, I actually leave the house. It's pretty shocking. We also hang out with our cats, watch movies. I'm a big video game fanatic, so I play a lot of like handheld games, particularly because I travel a lot. So like Professor Layton and Picross and stuff like that. And then I have a drum kit that I acquired a couple months ago, and I love banging on that. I've played the drum since I was like 3 years old, and so, yeah, I do a few things that aren't Drupal, but most of the time I try and do Drupal whenever possible. So,
you make up Drupal songs on the drums and stuff.
Yo, dude, that is going to be my new podcast. No, I'm just kidding, but yes. No.
Oh, man. All righty. So you do actually have something resembling a life outside of Drupal. It's good for folks to know, I think.
Yeah, not much of one, but yeah, I definitely try to, you know, we have house rules that, like, you know, there's a time when Drupal stops and family time begins, and but that's also why I'm up until crazy hours of the night usually too. So, but you know, I'm having fun, so it's all good.
Awesome. So, talking of Drupal and doing Drupal all the time, you work for a Drupal company, and you work specifically, you know, doing the Drupal community stuff, and you are a co-maintainer for several versions of Drupal now. And I think that a lot of people talk about that, and in the Drupal world, we're like, yes, of course, you know, here's Angie, she's co-maintainer, and that's a pretty big deal. But a lot of people don't actually know what that means. Even people who may know, oh, okay, so she can commit code to Drupal core, but like, what does it mean, like, day to day? Like how much time does that take, and like, what are you doing?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, so my job at Acquia is it's called Director of Community Development, but what it basically means is, like, my job is to make Drupal kick-ass, and it's an awesome job. So basically, Dries Beitart is my boss. And even though he's my boss, I still don't know how to pronounce his last name properly. But anyway, I know it's not boy tart, that's all I know, but anyway, he's my boss, and so, you know, we sort of get together, you know, and we figure out what the biggest challenges in Drupal are, what the, you know, kind of next cool things are that could be done to make it go even further, this kind of thing. So some of the things that I've worked on in the past have been, like, for example, you know, when I first joined the office of the CTO, you know, Drupal 7 wasn't in a very good spot, you know, so I spent a lot of time there sort of establishing release processes, working with the security team to get the, you know, a backlog of security issues cleaned out, you know, just making sure that patches were getting attention and this kind of a thing. Then I switched for a while to some Drupal.org focuses. So, you know, we had a lot of issues where, you know, we're sort of a community of web developers who didn't know how to make changes to our own website. And so that's not a very good situation to be in. So I did a bunch of work with the infrastructure team, sort of documenting a lot of stuff. Like, who do you talk to if you want to make changes on Drupal.org, and what's the process? And we got a few kind of, you know, pretty big changes rolled out that way. We put issue summaries on there, which is a big sort of, you know, it's a big productivity boost for the community. We added a little BU editor, WYSIWYG type of thing, so that the documentation team had better tools. You know, the ability to upload images into your posts, that was a missing feature on Drupal.org until last year. So, you know, a bunch of stuff like that, and kind of got some momentum going around that. A lot of work with the Drupal Association. So, you know, like trying to, you know, help with whatever I can, especially around Drupal.org, because that's sort of my shtick, but, you know, like helping with whatever I can to make the Drupal Association successful. And then lately, it's been a lot of Drupal 8 focus. So what I've been working on lately is yes, as you mentioned, being a core maintainer. And what that involves is essentially there are, like, probably at this point way more than 1,000 people, but basically like 1,000 plus people who all work on Drupal, the project. Not even counting contributed modules and stuff. This is just Drupal, the thing you download off Drupal.org when you get it. And so there's, you know, 1,000 people. They're all working in all kinds of different areas. You know, some are very highly focused on performance stuff. Some people just flit in and out and do little documentation patches once in a while. You know, it's all over the map. But my job is to basically help those people collaborate together and make sure that when they get a change through the review process, that I kind of give it final QA review and then sort of give it a yes, no at the end to allow it in, or say, ah, this is close, but, you know, still need a little bit of work, or, yeah, that's not actually going to fly. You know, like, this, we have to really change this up a lot, or whatever it is. But so my job is to basically keep the patches flowing in Drupal 8 at the moment. Although, yeah, I was appointed to maintain all three branches, just because we sort of lost that when Stephen Wittens, who's a you know, big muckety muck of Drupal past, who was sort of Dries's number two, left the project a couple of years ago. And so, you know, having commit access to all of the branches sort of frees it up so that Nathaniel Catchpole, David Rothstein, and Gabor, who are the release managers, can kind of stay focused on that. And I can sort of just help grease the wheels with other patches that, you know, don't need sort of release level quality control over them. So yeah, a lot of talking to people, a lot of flying around evangelizing Drupal a lot, you know, a lot of meeting with key contributors, a lot of sprints, a lot of all that kind of stuff. Just whatever makes Drupal kick ass, basically.
Do you ever actually write code anymore? Like, write your own patches?
Well, it's funny. I actually do now. I actually write more code than I did in the year before list, because I'm now the sort of release manager of Spark, which is the distribution that we're building in Drupal 7 to basically prototype the authoring experience improvements we're trying to get into Drupal 8. So I actually do get to code and debug stuff, and, you know, like, it's not very fancy code. I actually have one patch in Drupal core that I'm hoping I can get committed, and it's to make it so that on the installer page, if you type in a database that doesn't exist, but you're logged in with credential, or you've entered credentials of a user who has the ability to create databases, it will just effing create the database and not make you go to phpMyAdmin. Because that drives me nuts, you know, when I have to do all this stuff. So I'll get you a node ID that you can put in there so people can review my patch. But yeah, so I do write code, but definitely it's a lot more on the communication side of things and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I still pull out VI every couple of days and get to do a little bit of code slinging, and it's a lot of fun.
Nice. And VI plus one. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Emacs people.
So what you've had quite the long, illustrious Drupal career so far and continuing on. What is your like biggest highlight, proudest moment, thing that you just hold closest to you through that time?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, for sure, the moment that Drupal 7 was released was a huge moment. So my you know, before I was sort of a general core maintainer and kind of doing this Drupal community direct, you know, like stuff at Acquia, like my job was the release manager of Drupal 7. And so, you know, we had slogged through, you know, it was like a year and a half of, you know, code thaw, they call it, where you can commit whatever features that you want. And then another year and a half after that of bug fixes and nothing but bug fixes. And we got the number of critical bugs from 300 and something all the way down to zero. We rolled a couple of release candidates, and then it was like the fatal night on like January 5th of 2011, and IRC was just filled with people just bubbling with excitement and, you know, like hitting that button to like actually commit that code that actually like made the tag, created the release of Drupal 7.0. That was huge. It was just like amazing. And then we followed up a couple days later by having like parties all over the world. And I forget how many there were, but there was something like, I don't know, 263 parties in like 70 countries, or I don't know. It was a lot. It was like basically all over the globe. People were like getting together and like, you know, just going crazy. And it was a lot of fun. So that would definitely be like a main high point. I think, you know, I don't know. There's so many. I mean, I just, you know, it's funny. I gave a talk at Ohio Linux Fest the other week, and it was kind of about like the premise of the talk was like how to grow ravenously passionate contributors. And it was just sort of like walking through the different things that I went through that sort of led me to where I am today. And, you know, one of the other ones was my first DrupalCon, you know. Like, there's a lot of people, I think, who've never been to DrupalCon or maybe even never been to a Drupal camp or a user group meeting or anything. But it's so amazing, you know, getting to interact with people that you only know from online and kind of look up to and find out they're real people and they're nice people. And, you know, like, sitting around a table with them solving real problems, it was just, like, amazing and mind-blowing for me. So, you know, I would say that was definitely the catalyst that sort of launched me into the rest of my Drupal career, was just like meeting other Drupal people, you know, meeting Matt and Jeff and, you know, like all kinds of stuff. It was just, it was really, you know, meeting Dries for that matter, you know, it was a really awesome time. And not coincidentally, I now live in Vancouver, which is where the first Drupal camp or DrupalCon I went to was. So, you know, it had an impression, let's say that. So.
Well, Vancouver's also just a beautiful city.
It really is. It's awesome. Yeah.
So what gets you most excited about Drupal, like, right now? Like, what's the thing that's getting you stoked and excited today?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, I mean, just in general, the energy around Drupal 8, it's funny because, like, you know, we have, like, you know, sort of biweekly calls with the initiative leads. And for the longest time, they were just, like, very depressing. And it was like, gosh, you know, we feel like we're working so hard and nobody cares what we're doing in Drupal 8 and we can't get people to help us. And, you know, it feels like things aren't moving and all this kind of stuff. But, like, ever since, well, Denver really was a big turning point, and then Munich especially just turned on the fire hose. And I swear, every single day I go to the issue queue, I'm finding these awesome, amazing patches that are really just going to shape Drupal 8 to be this really, really awesome release. I mean, awesome from a backend developer perspective. So, like, we're shipping with Symfony components, which is really going to help people who not only want to, you know, do off-the-shelf stuff with Drupal, if they want a quick site that sort of follows a template, they could get that up and running. But, you know, if they run into something that Drupal's not good at, you know, which is hardly anything, of course, but once in a while, you know, but, you know, then they have this whole really powerful framework that they can use, you know, to build things on top of. And, you know, it's the same plumbing either way. We're also doing a bunch of work for front end developers as well. Like, we've committed a few major JavaScript changes, some JavaScript libraries. We've really radically streamlined the JavaScript and core, made it much smaller, much more performant on mobile. There's a bunch of people working on Twig integration, which is going to fix probably 90% of the problems we had in the old theme system, as long as we can get the performance going, knock on wood. Just like, you know, people just every day, there's people working on the entity API and making that awesome and kick-ass, like taking revisions out of nodes and making them work on anything and adding the ability to create draft revisions. And
nice.
just all of this stuff that's like, you know, Drupal 7, I felt like we really cleaned up a lot of stuff that was sort of, oh, we really have to fix that. You know, like we put image handling in and CCK in and stuff. But Drupal 8 shipping to be just like amazing. I mean, if everything goes according to plan, we get views in there, get a friggin' WYSIWYG in there. Oh, my God. You know, it'll actually be to the point where you can build really sophisticated sites with just core. And you don't need to turn to contrib to do basic functionality. And I think that's going to be a huge turning point for Drupal. And I'm really, really excited to see what happens next, basically.
So, well, related to that, the Spark project that you've been working on is definitely part of this, like, make it nice and usable out of the box. But so, and you mentioned Spark earlier, and we've talked about it briefly. But what is Spark now? Like, there's sparkdrupal.com, right? That you can go to, and there's stuff there, and there's lots of pretty pictures.
Yes, there's that. We have a designer and everything. It's like, wow, very professional.
Is Spark now, like, what is the goal? Like, what's the ultimate purpose that you're trying to shoot for there?
Sure. So, So I give a little bit of a background. So, you know, Dries has always been really adamant that, you know, we really have to fix the authoring experience in Drupal. Because whenever Drupal goes head to head against anything else in the world, it's always like, oh yeah, it's really powerful and flexible and you can do anything you want with it, but you have to install 30 modules to, you know, get it to the point where you can hand it off to someone non-technical. And that's a huge barrier because you don't have to do that with pretty much any other CMS, you know. And so we found that, you know, there's things like, you know, WordPress or a lot of these proprietary systems, Sitecore, whatnot, that are actually a lot technically less sophisticated than what Drupal can do. But because they look really nice out of the box and they're you know, have a nice workflow going, people will pick them because it's like, oh, heck, that's a lot less work for me to do just to like sit my authors in front of it and let them go. And so we wanted to fix that. And so basically, we embarked on a lot of like competitive research. So we looked at, you know, Squiz, and we looked at Squarespace, and we looked at WordPress, and we looked at, but trying to go across the board, not just the open source competitors that most people know about, like WordPress and Joomla, but also the proprietary ones they don't know of, and the ones that are actually kind of kicking our butt right now. So, you know, we went and sort of sampled all of these and tried to like distill from that research kind of the best ideas in each different areas. So what Spark is it's the approach we're taking to putting authoring experience improvements in Drupal 8. So the problem with Drupal 8 is that only about, I don't know, 100 or 200 people use it, you know, and what they're using it for is like, you know, a little development site to like do development on. They're not actually using it for real content. They don't have users signing up to their site, you know, with a couple of very special snowflakes. You know, Drupal 8 is just on your local host and that's about it. So if you really want people to test things and you want it to go, you have to really go for the current stable release, which is Drupal 7. And so what we did is we took these, we took this analysis that we did, and we have a designer, Kevin O'Leary, who kind of is the creative juices behind Spark. And he, you know, distills all these things down to a design, and we sort of bike share the design. Then we put it out there on Dries' blog and videos and stuff and trying to get some energy around it. And then we, you know, prototype it and user test it, and then we build it. And so what Spark is right now is it's a collection of modules. So the first one is Edit, which is inline editing capability. So the ability to, when you're looking at a page and you see a typo, you just click into the field with the typo and edit it right there, click Save, and you're out. And you don't have to go to a completely separate admin interface and try and find the value in a big, long form somewhere and this kind of stuff. That's built off the Aloha editor, so that's the second module is Aloha, and this is a project that has been around for a while and is getting a lot of really great traction around it. And the way it works is different than a traditional WYSIWYG, which, you know, will kind of put this janky iframe in your text area and try and emulate what your site is doing, and then you get all those kinds of problems where like you need like styles and they get out of sync, and so you're not actually looking at what your site's going to look like, and it looks more like tiny MCE than your actual site and this kind of nonsense. And the way Aloha works is it's actually using the HTML5 content editable attribute, which means that you're actually editing the actual HTML on your page. So you don't have to worry about this like div soup and font soup and all this kind of stuff. It just edits the HTML that you're going to see. And it makes it a lot cleaner of a solution. And they've done a bunch of work with us to try and get the plumbing in place so that it can better support Drupal for things like like media module, where you put little brackety things in and, you know, it turns it into a YouTube player and stuff like that. So a lot of work on that kind of stuff. The layout module is another big component. So this is a way to prototype some of the Drupal 8 blocks and layouts initiative type of stuff we wanted to see happen. So this thing is a responsive layout builder. So you have grids and breakpoints and you can, you know, kind of click and drag to build your layout. And then the way it works is you can define a different layout per breakpoint. So say for mobile, for tablet, for desktop. And that's all working in Drupal 7 right now. You can actually download it and use it on top of panels and, you know, go nuts. I say working with a little asterisk. It's probably buggy because it's alpha software, but, you know, all these things are working. We've been able to demo them at Drupal cons and things like that. And that's been really,
seven version, like modules on Drupal.org.
Yeah, yeah. All of this stuff is available on Drupal.org. And in fact, a couple of distributions are starting to pull in components of Spark into their own distributions. So like Drupal Commons, for example, is using the Aloha module. And I know Panoply has talked about using layout module as, you know, because they're all panels all the time. And so, you know, a responsive layout builder as opposed to a, you know, kind of a div soup layout builder is something they're really excited about too. So, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of interest in it. But for now, what we're really heavily focused on is getting these things into Drupal core. And so we have a team that consists of Gabor Hoisty, who's I think he's user 37 or something on Drupal.org, like an old school guy. He's also the Drupal 6 core maintainer, the Drupal 8 multilingual initiative lead. And, you know, so basically he's a huge slacker. But anyway, so he's working on it. Wim Lears, who's a really top front-end performance guy. Jesse Beach, and she's a really great JavaScript front-end ninja type of person. So they're the sort of the engineers on the effort. And yeah, I mean, we're just basically going nuts trying to fix up Drupal 8 and make it kick ass out of the box for content authors. And then the idea is that the things that we get done in Drupal 8, we then backport to Drupal 7 so people can use them today and they don't have to wait until 2014 or whenever people start using Drupal 8. So I think it's pretty win-win. I hope. You know, we're starting to, our core patches are just starting to make their way into the queue, so we'll have to see how that goes long term. But you know, the community reception so far has been excellent. And I think these are all problems that we all agree, you know, kind of need to be solved for Drupal's future. So, you know, yeah, if you want to help with that, there's actually a community initiatives page for Spark, which I can get Addy the URL to, but it's basically drupal.org/community-initiative/drupal-core/spark. And this is sort of all the stuff that we're working on right now. So any help anybody wants to give to any of that would be super appreciated, because we don't have a lot of time. We have like 6 weeks left and a lot of work to do in the meantime. So yeah, sorry, that was really rambly, but I really am excited about Spark. It's just, it's been a really fun project to work with, an amazing team to work with, and I think if we get everything done, it's gonna really change the game for Drupal. So
yeah, indeed. So I'm curious, like, though, like, in terms of the help, like, what kinds of help, like, do you need developers, do you need end users to test stuff, do you need designers, like, what kind of help do you need on a project like that at the stage that it is right now, at least?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I would say, like, you know, at the stage it's in right now, what we mostly need are sort of like developers and especially patch reviewers. We have a couple of patches, you know, like everybody else, you know, you sit your package in the queue, it doesn't always get reviewed in a timely fashion. So there's a few of those types of things going on. But designers are great. We have a designer, Kevin O'Leary, but he's always, you know, he's always into bouncing ideas off the community to see, you know, how things could be better. We love having real actual content authors using our stuff. I would say we probably need more of a technical, like maybe the person who trains content authors to test their stuff, because there's, you know, there's still bugs and things like that because it's under active development. But that kind of stuff is key. Accessibility knowledge would be huge. You know, we're definitely committed to fixing all of that accessibility stuff, but you know, it's not a strong point of the team right at the moment. There's actually going to be an accessibility sprint at Drupal Camp Toronto in the middle of November. I think it's November 18th. So, you know, we're hopefully going to send at least a couple people over there. And that would be a great time to sort of crank on all of this kind of stuff. But yeah, almost any type of help that you can give me, I can find something for you to work on. So yeah, any of those kinds of things. Testing, if you're familiar with automated testing, if you, you know, even, you know, writing documentation, you know, helping with the actual usability testing, filing bugs, filing patches for bugs, helping us collaborate on patches, all of that kind of stuff is super helpful. And, you know, if for some reason we can't find you a place to work, I can find somebody in Drupal 8 who could use your help. So, yeah, come me. So,
you want Drupal 8 to kick ass, you can be part of that. As I was saying. Well, yeah, I'm very, very excited. I've been hearing a lot of talk about the Spark stuff. And for folks who are curious about the other aspects of Drupal 8 that have sort of been mentioned or alluded to through here, we do have the previous podcast is interviews with the five initiative leads. So covering sort of all the different main initiatives, official initiatives in Drupal 8. And talking to those leads about what's going on, where things are, and how you can get involved with those different things. And then the one before that, two podcasts ago, we actually talked with Jen Lampton about all the Twig stuff. So if you want to kind of wrap your head around what the Twig and the theme layer stuff's about, we also have that. So there is a lot of stuff going on. So you can find your niche, find your thing that you think is exciting, that you really want to see happen, and people will definitely... find a way for you to be able to help, I think.
Yes, we will definitely do that. And in fact, there's actually a structure for this. There's a every 2 weeks, they have what are called core mentoring hours. And again, I can get you a URL for this, but it's drupal.org/core-mentoring-hours. And it's great. It's like time set aside on IRC to ask whatever questions you have about how to contribute to core. So if you... you know, have never, if you don't even know what Git is, they will help walk you through that. If you know how to develop really well, but you just don't know what to work on with Drupal 8, they can give you some patches to work on there. And you're working with, you know, key core developers who take time out to sort of handhold people who are new. And it's a great program. There's also a program you're involved with, right, Addy?
Yeah, yeah, the Drupal Ladder stuff. DrupalLadder.org is... The Drupal ladder sort of, you know, started with, basically creating a ladder of steps that you can follow to get involved with helping core. And it starts off with the very basics of, okay, let's get you a local development environment set up and let's install Drupal 8. And then it walks you all the way through. So it sort of starts with sort of a very basic knowledge and then walks you through the tools that you need. And we've started to bring that together with the core mentoring team. And we're like, Drupalize Me actually has like a free workshop that we do at events, which I call community tools for lack of a better name, but where we basically walk through some of those initial steps of the ladder, but in like a classroom workshop setting together as a group. And we did that in Munich at the core mentoring sprint. And that was pretty awesome. And two of the people who went through that little mini workshop in the morning to get kind of bootstrapped ended up getting their patch. They did a patch and it got committed live at the event. And that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was totally awesome. It was also awesome to go down there and see like 100 people in this room. It was like, holy cow, it was amazing.
That was amazing. And I found when, so I started doing Drupal Ladder. So Drupal used during meetups. Just local meetups, not necessarily at large events. And so I started doing meetups in Copenhagen. We were sort of kicking around. We didn't really have any kind of regular meetup like this to work on things. And I ended up changing it so that it's Wednesday night. Wednesday night in Europe is when the core mentoring hours happen on Wednesdays. And so we actually overlay our meetup at the same time as the core mentoring hours. So people can actually get on and talk to those folks so that because I can't necessarily, you know, direct everybody or I don't have my head in the game as much. And so I found that that's worked really well to have the meetup then. and get people familiar with the core mentoring people and the channel and how it works and getting people involved that way. So
nice.
Great stuff. Everybody who's working on that stuff, Jess, Tim Plunkett in particular, I've worked with. It's a great effort. And I think that's the thing I think from my perspective has been missing for a long time that I think we are all thinking and wanting to make happen. Because like we've been talking about working with Drupal and contributing for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh yeah, let's actually like organize it and teach people whenever we can. And like, it was like, oh yes, that's exactly what needs to happen. So I'm excited. And I think overall that whole mentoring concept and making the road to getting involved a little easier is a big trend in the community right now that I think is going to be super successful. So
yeah, well, and the other thing too, well, not to get too far off on tangent, but like you learn these skills and they're going to help you in every friggin' thing that you do, not only with Drupal, but with life in general. I mean, knowing how to collaborate in an open source project, I mean, that's huge. You're going to learn so many skills that you need in every single possible thing that you do, from version control to, issue queue workflows and, how to review patches well and, like how to affect, coding standards, all kinds of stuff. There's all kinds of things that they teach you at these things, and it's really amazing to see. So one last thing on Spark just before we move off that topic. If you want to try it out, if you go to drupal.org/project/spark, you can download either the Drupal 7 or the Drupal 8 version, and it's got all the modules kind of packed in there ready for you to just play around with and see what you think. And yeah, I hope you like it, and please help us get it in core. Yay! So, thanks.
Awesome. We just sort of went on and on and on about. don't get us started, people.
That's right.
But coming from sort of another angle, tips or advice for people who are just new to Drupal and are just trying to actually figure out Drupal. What would you think is the best sort of resource or place for people to get started to just wrap their head around what is Drupal?
Well, this is going to sound really self-serving, but I would tell them, I'll just be honest. I would tell them the Using Drupal book and Drupalize.me, honestly, are probably the two best resources for doing that. But in case you don't have money or whatever, although I bet you would earn your money back on either of those resources. Obviously you probably know what Drupalize.me is because you're listening to this podcast. Using Drupal basically talks you through all of the top contributed modules and why you would use them and how to use them. So it walks you through on a project basis of like, here's how you create a photo gallery and here's how you create a job posting board or whatever. But through the process, you learn what CCK is and what views are and what image handling and how you deal with WYSIWYG and how you do these other things. So, I would say that those are actually really good places to start. Apart from that, the way I started, and I don't necessarily recommend this to everybody, but it certainly worked for me, was I hung out in the forums and the Drupal support channels. So there's like Drupal.stackexchange, there's Drupal support IRC, there's the forums on Drupal.org. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I would just kind of read what other people were asking and I would try and figure it out. And within about 2 weeks, not only was I able to sort of like have a really good knowledge of Drupal and things that you could do with it, but I was actually helping other people. And that probably more than anything skyrocketed my karma to the point where, it's like people started to know who I was. I started to get a lot better help with, things I was asking questions about and all this kind of stuff. So, that would be my recommendation. It's not for everybody, though. If you don't have time to do that, then I would buy a book or watch a video personally. But yeah.
No, what Drupalize.me is, it's Lullabot's video training website. So we have a training service with videos. You can go check it out. We got some free stuff. You can poke around. But I started out my Drupal career by hanging out in the Drupal-support IRC channel and just looking at the questions people were asking, seeing what the answers were, and learning how to find the answers myself. That's a huge skill in and of itself. to figure out like where the resources are and how to find them. And so, yeah, just sort of hanging out with the community and listening to the flow was tremendously helpful to me. That sort of changed my world.
Yep, I totally agree. And also, like, you start to kind of know your way around, you know, the community start, you know, kind of showing up, answering other people's questions. You're going to have a never-ending supply of money, I'm pretty sure, because people will, like, pay, like, oh my God, you know what you're doing, and you're helping me, please help, you know, kind of thing. I mean, it can be lucrative as well as informative, you know, or informative. So, yeah, I don't know. I really think that you hit the nail on the head. It's like getting involved with the community really is the best way to learn Drupal, you know, much more so than just kind of flailing around trying to learn it on your own.
Yeah, might as well use those thousands and thousands of brains out there, you know, and...
Yeah, brains. No.
Brains. All right. Well, we should probably start wrapping this up, but I pulled two questions from the community. We sort of put out, like, does anybody have questions? And we got two that I am curious about myself. So I'm going to put these to you. The first one is from, they both came from Twitter. The first one is from Katakrab. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's like Dutch. And so it's sort of like Danish, but not really. And I can't really speak Danish well, but anyway.
It sounds close.
Benjamin. So her question was, what about Drupal 7 would you do differently in hindsight?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one thing, a couple of things, and both of them, thankfully, we've done differently in Drupal 8. So we've learned our lessons from them. So the first is... not have let the critical bugs get so out of control. Because we sort of in Drupal 7 did a all-you-can-eat kind of buffet thing. Like, you know, oh, I want image handling and I want dashboards and I want blah, blah, blah. And we sort of like pulled everything in. And it's easy to do that. You know, you're on the high of like, oh my God, it's just before feature freeze. You have to get everything in. But the problem with that is we accumulated a lot of technical debt. And cleaning that up took a really long time. And then cleaning that up took a really long time. And we didn't have as many people helping us, you know, as we did before feature freeze. Because after feature freeze, of course, you know, you're fixing bugs. And that's not quite as fun, you know, stuff. So in Drupal 8, to get around this, what we've done is we've implemented the idea of issue thresholds. And what that means is that we have a little counter on your Drupal.org dashboard. You can see a counter of the number of critical and major tests and bugs. And basically, if the critical tests and bugs and the major, you know, criticals can only go to 15 and majors can only go to 100, if they ever go over that number, then we stop committing new features until we get the technical debt down. And that's actually been pretty effective at people sort of like rallying around, you know, things. It's caused us to make sure we get things documented properly so we don't get to the end of Drupal 7 and have like 500 changes out there that nobody's stumbled on yet, you know, this kind of thing. It's also helped with like, you know, people will actually curate the queue once in a while and make sure that it says there are 105 critical tasks. Are there actually that many? And they'll go through and say, well, no, these are not. And, you know, and they'll also cause people to rally on each other's patches just to push them over the finish line. So that actually, that was an idea by Nathaniel Ketchpole, who's the Drupal 8 release manager. And I think overall that was really successful and a really good move. And then the second thing that I would have done differently is timed like accessibility and usability and... documentation freezes a lot later in the cycle than we did in Drupal 7. So we were, you know, we were operating on this misguided assumption in Drupal 7 that we were going to be done with everything in a couple months. So of course it would make sense to do a string freeze in December, you know, of, you know, the year that we, you know, and not, you know, little did we know that it would be another 13 months after that by the time Drupal 7 came out. So, you know, Dries posted a blog post about a month ago or so, kind of outlining an updated release schedule. And the way it works in Drupal 8 is, you know, we have our feature freeze that ends, or I'm sorry, our sort of development phase, and that ends on December 1st when we have feature freeze. And then we enter a sort of, you know, the development, sort of a code slush kind of thing is what we call it. But instead of that only being 3 months, it's more like 5 months. So it's like 5 months of cleanup. to go through and kind of, you know, start whipping away at those critical numbers and things like that. And it's also a time, though, not only for stabilizing a release, but also for tying up loose ends. So, you know, if we get a couple of features in, but they're not quite right yet, we have time to smooth them out. We have time to make the UI nicer. We have time to adjust the documentation. We have time to do all that. And we really aren't dealing with documentation or string freezes or UI freezes and that kind of thing until more like closer to release candidate, so like next summer. And I think that's really smart because that's going to give us enough time to kind of do everything we need to do to make Drupal 8 the most amazing release ever. And hopefully we won't have the long runway to get there like we did in Drupal 7. I mean, yeah, remains to be seen. We're gonna listen to this podcast a year from now and laugh and say, oh, wasn't that funny when you thought that you might actually get Drupal 8 out on time? But it can't possibly be more soul-sucking, I hope, knock on wood, than it was in Drupal 7. We'll find out if we go to new depths of soul-sucking. But yes. So those were the couple of things that I would have done differently because I pushed on things. I sort of enforced rules that I wish now that I hadn't enforced quite as much. I wish we had allowed more time in the cycle for some of the stuff that needed to happen. And I think we've corrected a lot of that stuff in the Drupal 8 release cycle. So fingers crossed, we'll see how it works.
Sweet. All right. And then the last question is from Juan Pablo Wampi, our new employee, actually. But he asked this question on Twitter, which is, I think, a really great question for you, which is, what is your best tip to handle time having so many open fronts?
Right. When I saw this question, I laughed. Oh, it's a great question. So I'll tell you the website I found that most accurately describes how I manage my time with air quotes around manage, big air quotes. It's called structuredprocrastination.com. And how it works is you put something on your to-do list that is like really important and has a due date that's just super urgent, you know, and it's like really, oh my God, you know, like, and in his example, he put, you know, like, I don't know what it was like ordering books for the course that he was teaching. And in my example, for a long time, it was like, get using Drupal done or something like that. But when you have something that big on your to-do list at the very top, what you'll end up doing is a bunch of other things that are not that thing because you're putting off doing the thing that you should be doing. And that's basically how I end up appearing to be very productive, because I'm basically avoiding some big major tasks that I really ought to be working on. So I do lots of other things to avoid doing that. It's pretty hilarious. But yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have any great like getting things done tips or nice to-do list managers or anything. I just basically get all of the stuff I get done because I'm avoiding working on something more urgent. Ta-da! Anyway.
I think that's probably how most of the world gets it done.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I've tried GTD. I'm not wired that way. So I work on the principle of like, you know, have something really on fire at the forefront and then do the other things that are more fun than that. And, you know, it seems to work out pretty well. So
awesome. I'll have to think about that.
Yes, but don't do that at home, kids. No. To do apps. Getting things done, Merlin Man for the win. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, that's the truth.
Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast, Angie. It's great to catch up with you. And I definitely hope that we can spend some time chatting at Bad Camp in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And thanks a lot for having me. It's great to be back on a Lullabot podcast again, you know, like old times. So,
yeah, it's been quite a while, right? So. So anyway, thank you very, very, very much. And also for, I mean, just everything you do. I mean, everybody, I think, looks up to you. You're like one of those few people in the community that people just, everybody respects and everybody appreciates what you do. There's no, you know, crazy controversy, although maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some core developers who grumble occasionally. I don't know. But
yeah, you know, I'd like to keep it interesting. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah,
you're an amazing person. So, so thank you for that.
Geez. Thanks, Addie. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. I mean, it's wonderful to be part of a community that is so just constantly amazing and, you know, inspiring and, you know, just funny and hilarious and down to earth. I mean, I learn new things every day from interacting with these folks, and you know, they're just the nicest group of people that you could ever meet. So
I agree. Indeed. Yeah. Alrighty, so that is wrapping this up. And I just want to mention before we actually sign off that if you do have questions or suggestions or general thoughts, or I don't know, you want to send us funny pictures, you can let us know. We have a Twitter account. So it's DrupalizeMe without the dot. So just DrupalizeMe, all run together, is our Twitter handle. It's the same thing for Facebook. So you can go to facebook.com/DrupalizeMe and you can check out the Facebook page. Or you can just send us an email. If you go to drupalize.me/contact, that's our contact form, and you can send us an email with, you know, whatever you have on your mind. And we do want to, you know, find out what you want, and we have lots of podcasts to do, so let us know what you think. And then in our next podcast we're going to be talking about base themes, sub themes, whether you should use them, and if you do, which one. So check us out next time, and until then, have fun in Drupaland.